a few topics from the Sedra. Says that Basparo called Moshe Moshe Kimen Hamayim Mishisihu. The proper name would have been Moshui. He was drawn from the water. Why Moshe? Okay. So the name Moshe is because he eventually would save other people from the water. And the idea being that if somebody deserves a miracle to happen to them, and to save them, either save their life or save their property or whatever, it's a sign that the Rabban Shalom wants them to use that life, that property or whatever for the sake of other people also. So therefore, he wasn't Moshui, but he was Moshe, because if he deserved that people should pull him, she saw somehow Baruch HaKodesh that he was going to do that for others also. I always like to say that's the pshat and the bracha of Brichos HaGomel. Right? Somebody is saved from something. He recovers from an illness, or he's saved from something that is life-threatening. Right, that happens to him, so he has to bench Gomel. By the way, just as an aside, you only bench Gomel when something happened that could have normally resulted in a tragedy, right, in the loss of life, and it didn't. Right, for instance, it was in an accident, and that kind of accident usually ends in or could very possibly end in loss of life. And he didn't. He was saved. But if you were in a near miss, you almost had an accident, that doesn't count. It counts that you should thank the Rebbe so very much, but you don't bench Gomer for that. Right? You don't bench Gomer for a near miss. Somebody once asked Rav Bick the following Shiloh. He was walking down the street, and he just crossed the street, and he looked back, and he saw what? Right, right. And he saw that a flower pot had fallen from a 10th story window and dropped just in the place that he was a few seconds before. And had he been there, right, he would have fallen on his head, he would have been killed. So he wanted to know if he had a bench gombo. So Rabik told him the following. He said, something similar happened to me the other day. My wife was hanging my pants up on the line on the roof, and a wind came and blew them down. Now, I was in those pants the day before. He said, I didn't bench Gomel. You don't have to bench Gomel either. I only bench Gomel for something that actually happened and not... Okay, in any case. So, what's the bracha we make? Gomel l'chayovim tovo shegomelani kol tov. So the simple meaning of that bracha, which raises a very serious question, is the one who pays those that are guilty good, who gave me good. Gomel l'chayovim tovos. The Rabban Shalom pays to people who are guilty good things, and therefore he gave me also good. That means that you're saying that you were guilty, and really you should have died. But it says you should never say such a thing, because I'll tiftach pel l'sot. Person shouldn't say it should have happened to me or something like that, because you're opening your mouth to the Satan, and then the Satan says, well, let's see, maybe really it should have happened to you. So you don't say such a thing. So they ask, how could you say Hagomel l'chayovim tovos? So I think it means something else. Hagomel l'chayovim tovos, chayev can also mean not guilty but responsible, or there's a better word for it. Chayiv means responsible, I guess, right? No.
Obligated.
Obligated, yeah, okay, that's a better word. Obligated. When the Rabban Shalom does something to a person and saves his life, does something good for him that could have resulted in a tragedy, so he becomes obligated. That makes him obligated. Now you have to use what was saved in a positive way for others. So that's also what the name Moshe represents, even though he was Moshui, but because of that, he had an obligation to be a Moshe to save others. Okay. Next. Moshe Rabbeinu kills the Mitzri, runs away from Mitzrayim, and he comes upon a well where the daughters of Yisro are ready to water their sheep, and the shepherds come and chase them away, and Moshe Rabbeinu saves them from the shepherds. So their father is amazed that they came home early, because usually they had to wait till the end of the line to water their sheep, because the shepherds pushed them away and took the rights to the well first. And that day they came home early. So he asked them, "Mami hartem lawa, how'd you come back so fast?" So they said, "Ish mitzri hitzilanu min haroim." An Egyptian man saved us from the shepherds. So Moshe was not an Egyptian man, right? So why'd they say Ish Mitzri? So some say that it means not that Moshe saved them, but Moshe told them the whole story, that he killed an Egyptian and he was fleeing Paro, and that's where he was there. So they said, you know who saved us? That Mitzri who got killed. Because if that Mitzri didn't get killed, Moshe wouldn't be there. So they traced back their benefit to that Mitzri who got killed. Even though he didn't do anything, he surely didn't have intention to save them when he got killed. He didn't have intention to do anything. He was the object, the victim, but still they traced their benefit back to him. And that's how a person really has to look at Hakaras HaTov.
Moshe was dressed as
a Mitzvah. Hold on one second. Hakaras HaTov. He had a, what's it called? He had to, that's how you have to have gratitude to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You always have to trace things back to its source. Because if you recognize good in this world and you trace it back to its source, eventually you come back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? They give the example of a baby who drinks milk from a bottle. So he thinks that he has to give thanks to the bottle for providing him with milk. So he daily thanks the bottle for giving him milk. Gets a little bit older, he sees the mother pours the milk from a container. He says he's been making a mistake all these days. He's been thanking the bottle, but it's not the bottle that gives milk, it's a container that gives milk. So he starts giving thanks to the container. Then he gets a little bit older, he sees the mother takes a container out of the refrigerator. He says, oh, refrigerators have to be thanked for giving milk. Finally sees you buy the milk in a store. You have to thank the store. If you trace it back and back, all the way to the cows and then to the grass, you come back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, the idea of Hakaras HaTov, that's why it says that somebody who is not a Makir Tova, who is ungrateful, says in the beginning of this week's Sedra, Vayokav Melech Chodesh Al Mitzrayim Asher Lo Yodas Yosef. It says that he knew Yosef, but he was ungrateful to him. And somebody who's ungrateful to human beings eventually will deny God. Because the only way that we have a connection, a hakara, a recognition of God, is through the good that he does. He's hatov, the hametiv. Right? We can't see him directly. We see his actions. So we recognize God as good. That's what God is. Because of the goodness that he does. So we make a bracha, hatov, hametiv. So if someone does not recognize good in this world, he's not going to come to recognize God. So you need, it says, that's why we say Ashrei, three times a day. Because there's two things in it. One, Poseach es Yodecho Masbiya L'chol Chai Rotzon. And the second, the Aleph Beis. And I think the idea is, Poseach es Yodecho reminds us that God is the source of all good. But then you have to trace it back to its source, because you could thank your boss, or thank the stock market, or whatever. But if you trace it back to its source, you come to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Aleph Beis teaches you to trace it back to its source. And the Poseach es Yodecho tells you to recognize the good. So that's the Ish Mitzri. They traced it back to the source of why they were saved. Okay, but the Medrash says not like that. The Medrash says they were referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they called him Ish Mitzri. And because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu did not merit being buried in Eretz Yisrael, because he was not Moda Biarzo. He didn't admit to the fact that he was not a Mitzri, but he was an Ivri. And Yosef, on the other hand, right, was Zoche, that his body should be brought from Mitzrayim and buried in Eretz Israel, because he was Hoda Biarzo. Because he said, Ivri Anochi, what did he say, what's it called? Evan Ivri, right? No, what did he say? What?
The other guy,
he says Gunav Gunafti Meretz HaEvri. Right. He said I was stolen away from the land. Okay.
That's what
Paul said. So first of all, two things. First of all, Moshe Rabbeinu was not an Ivri. He was born in Mitzrayim. So what was he denied his origins? His origins were Mitzrayim. He was born in Mitzrayim. What's the problem? Secondly, Moshe didn't say that. Benos Yisrael said it. So you'll say, okay, so Moshe heard it, and he didn't correct that. He wasn't there. Right? Why? How do I know he isn't there? Because Yisrael says, Va'ayo, where is he? If he was there, what's Yisrael asking, where is he? He's right here. That's him. So what does it mean? Moshe didn't hear what was said. He didn't say it. And not only that, it was true. He was an Ish Mitzri, he was born in Mitzrayim. So they say what the idea is the following. That a Jew, no matter where he is born, right, is considered an Eretz Yisraelitic person. Ish Ish. Echod ha-nolad ba, ve-echod ha-metzapeh lirosa. Right? The Yerushalayim is considered the birthplace of people who were born there, and people who want to be there. It's their birthplace too. In fact, they say that there was a time when the Turks were in control of Eretz Israel, and they made a decree that anyone who was not born in Yerushalayim had to leave. They, expelled all the foreigners from Yerushalayim. And you had to come and make a declaration that you were born in Yerushalayim in order to be able to stay. So they came to Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, people who were born in Europe and made Aliyah in those days, and wanted to know, were they allowed to lie and say that they were natural born Yerushalmis in order not to be to be expelled from the country. So he said, the Medrash says, Echad HaNolad Bo, right? Ish Ish Yerushalayim, it says, not only somebody who's born there, but somebody who wanted to be there also is considered born in Yerushalayim. It's not a lie. He said, according to that Medrash, you can declare that you're a born Yerushalmi. That's what they did. In any case, what does it mean? Echad ha-nolad sham, the echad ha-metzapeh lirosa. Eretz Yisrael, especially Yerushalayim, represents a certain status of a Jew. Right? A Yisraelitic Jew means a Jew who understands that he has to be different than the rest of the world. And that's what Eretz Yisrael is all about. The antithesis of secular Zionism. Secular Zionism, the purpose of Israel is that we should be like all the nations of the world. Herzl was concerned about anti-Semitism, and he attributed anti-Semitism in his early years to the fact that Jews were different religiously. And if they would convert to Catholicism, that would solve the problem of anti-Semitism. And he wrote in his diary that the proudest day he could think of is the day that he and the people of his shtetl would march to the Catholic Church with the priest to be baptized. And that would solve the problem of anti-Semitism. He changed his mind about that after Dreyfus trial. Because Dreyfus was an assimilated Jew who sparked tremendous anti-Semitism. So he saw it's not religion that causes anti-Semitism. So he changed his mind. He decided the reason that Jews are hated, because we're not normal. We live in other people's lands, speak other people's languages, take up advantage of their economies. If we had our own land, our own language, our own post office, our own army, and subsequent secular Zionist thinkers said, our own perverts and criminals, right, then we would be normal. And the nations of the world would love us. So today, Baruch Hashem, we have everything of our own, and they just love us, the world. They can't think what to do for us first, right? So it not only didn't solve the problem of anti-Semitism, it created a new anti-Semitism. Because now, Goyim don't hate Jews. That's right. That is, you know, not refined to hate Jews because they have those long noses. Now they hate Israelis because they're pushy, they are occupiers, or whatever other thing. Who are these Israelis? They hate Zionists. Who are the Zionists? Everybody from the Neturei Karta to the most assimilated Jew with those long noses, they're all Zionists. So they've created a new, more refined kind of anti-Semitism. In fact, my Rosh Yeshiva pointed out that back towards the beginning of the secular Zionist movement, they saw that they weren't going to get Eretz Israel. The Turks weren't as interested. They were interested in being bribed. They weren't interested in giving anything for it. And a lot of the dignitaries came here and were very upset with what they saw. They weren't even interested in this land. And they were offered by the British government Uganda, right, as either a temporary or a permanent solution to the Jewish problem. You could have your Jewish homeland there. And it lost. The majority were not for it. But there was a strong minority that would have taken Uganda, right, to be the place where Jews could be normal. So Rabbi Shiva pointed out, Rabbi Gifter Zatzal, years ago, there was a vote in the United Nations that Zionism is racism, which again created a new, he said, it's so heaven sent that the country that made the motion was Uganda. Here was a place that Jews were supposed to, here's the country that Badafka made the thing that Zionism is racism. In any case, but what is the purpose of Eretz Israel? Eretz Israel is just the opposite, that we should be able to be unlike the nations of the world, not because there's something wrong with them. They could be perfect people who get Olam Haba, but they have a different mission in this world than we do. They have to keep seven mitzvahs, they have to be moral. But as we said many times, we have to be holy. They don't have to be holy. And therefore they create a society of morality. At best, we have to create a society of holiness. And therefore we need a place that we can be insulated from the nations of the world, not isolated, insulated, where we can create a society with our own standards and values and stand out and be a beacon and a light to the nations of the world. We're not isolated from them, we have connection to them. But we're insulated from them, so we're like oil and water. Right? The oil floats on top of the water with a certain surface tension that separates it. The oil protects the water and the water supports the oil. That's how Jews and non-Jews can coexist. But when we try to become like the Goyim, whether in Golis or in Eretz Israel, then when you try to mix the oil into the water, eventually the oil separates. And what separates it is the water pressure. Like Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, the Jew can make Kiddush or the Goy will make Havdalah. Either we separate ourselves by sanctifying ourselves or the Goy will push us out. And that was in Mitzrayim, was in Spain, in Germany. Whenever we try to assimilate into the cultures around us, the Goyim decided they're not interested with us anymore. So a Jew, therefore, no matter where he is, right, even if he wasn't born in Eretz Israel, but he has to give the appearance of somebody different. He's not just one of the crowd. There's something different about him. And hopefully that difference is something positive, right? And therefore, if the daughters of Yisrael could mistake Moshe Rabbeinu for a Mitzri and say each Mitzri there was something wrong with Moshe Rabbeinu, that he didn't stand out, right, as an Eretz Yisrael Dika Yid and not a Mitzri. And that's lo holda bi'arzo. Therefore he wasn't Zocha to be buried in Eretz Yisrael.
Not to argue with the issue, there was no such thing as an Ivri at that time.
There was.
Was in Mitzrayim.
Right, but they, but
the
that's
say,
true.
Wait one second.
It's obviously a few months away from Pesach. But you forgot, we said in the Haggadah, right? Melamed shehayu mitzuyanim shom. Lo shinu es malbusham, lo shinu es lashonam, lo shinu es shmam. And even though they gave up Bris Mila and they served idolatry, they still were different. And that's why what's it called? Paro said, "He am bnei Israel, rav yosef menu." They didn't look at them as Egyptians, even though they were very patriotic. They're those Ivrim. And what's it called?
That's right, but this was
no, fine. But these people were known to be Ivrim. And they were not, what's it called, they weren't the run-of-the-mill Mitzri. There was something different about them. And even though they stooped down to the 49th, but as a nation, they still maintain some different. They're not Mitzrim. They're somebody different. Right. Yaled Minho Ivrim. Right. And he was telling that that's a Mitzrayim. But in Midian also. Yeah, but in Midian also, they knew that they Avram Avinu, they knew of the Avos, they knew who their uncle was.
But he grew up among the Egyptians in royalty.
Right. But that was a Taina. That was a Taina. He knew his brothers were. He killed the Mitzri.
But Ivri was still in the Senate. He was still in the Senate.
Right. Right, he knew. Okay.
He was already destroyed because he was not allowed to carry his soil. What do we
need to manage? But it says that that was one of the contributing factors. There were many contributing factors. Had he been molded by art, so maybe would have had an extra schus that wouldn't have been his punishment. That at least, or that he wouldn't have entered Eretz Yisrael alive, they would have put his body. Would have carried his body to Eretz Yisrael, like Yosef. He wasn't buried in Eretz Yisrael. Not that he couldn't come to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. But in any case, the Medrash points that out, that Moshe Rabbeinu could, if he could be mistaken for a Mitzri, there's something wrong. A Jew shouldn't be able to be mistaken for a Mitzri.
If I don't postulate Yisro's question, Ayo, sort of gives a hint to the first page of Ish Mitzri on Ish Mitzri. It gives the Benos Yisro the benefit of the doubt that it's not that they left him. Moshe Rabbeinu behind. They're talking about the Ish Mitzri.
Right.
And then Yisro says,
where is he?
They're not referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right. They're referring to the Ish Mitzri. So where is he?
I hear. Okay, next. Vayoel Moshe Loshevis Asoish. Another fantastic medrash. Gemara, really. Vayoel Moshe. Right? Okay. So, the Vayoel can mean to begin. It also can mean to swear. So the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu gave an oath to Yisro that his firstborn would be separated for idolatry. Okay? Idolatry. And that's in fact what happened in the end, that Gershom, who was was Moshe Rabbeinu's firstborn, his son became the Levi or the Kohen for Pesel Micha, which wasn't 100% Avodah Zorah, but was bordering Avodah Zorah. Question is obviously, how in the world can Moshe Rabbeinu make such an oath to Yisro to give his son over to idolatry? Right. So the Michtam Eliyahu explains the following. He says, first of all, according to the Maral, whenever the Medrashim say that somebody swore such and such, it doesn't necessarily mean they actually said those words and made an oath. An oath means that a person has shown that he's committed to what he said. Okay? When you make an oath, then it's a commitment. So if a person does something that has the same commitment as an oath, it means that he made an oath. It's just as if he made an oath. So if he did something that entails the same commitment of making a shvua, it's just as if he made a shvua. That's the first thing. So Moshe Rabbeinu understood that living by Yisro entailed a tremendous danger. Yisro was not yet a Maimin Bashem. He was still investigating all the Avodah Zorahs in the world. Okay, he didn't come. He says, Ato Yodati, after Kriyas Yamsuf, that's when he really he solidified his belief in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Till then he was searching. Because of that, right, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that living in the proximity or in the environment of a Yisro could have a bad influence on him. It's not just that people can be influenced by their surroundings, but the Rambam says, Derech Priyoso Shel Adam, it is the nature, the very nature of a human being to be influenced by other people, to be influenced by their environment. Good environment is a good influence, a bad environment is a bad influence. It's the nature of a human being. It's impossible not to be influenced, because it's your nature. You'd be going against nature. It's like somebody saying, I could put my hand to fire and not get burned. That's the, I mean, there could be miracles that Avraham Avinu didn't get burnt. But unless a miracle happens, it's going to happen. It's part of the nature. Human beings were created to be, as they say, social animals. And therefore we are definitely influenced. That's something that could happen. It's something that it's part of our nature. I'll tell you an interesting Rambam. Migdal Oz on the Rambam, of where the Rambam knew that. Right? But let's first see why is that. Why did God make people to be so easily influenced, okay, impressionable? So the reason is for good, because since in order to really reach perfection, people need to work together, as we've explained many times. Shalom, shlemus, is a group effort. No one thing in this world, except for God, is perfect. Everything needs other things to work together with it towards perfection. So in order to work together with other people, you need to be influenced by other people. You need people to work together to have an effect on each other. So the Rabban Shem put that power of being impressionable and influenced for the good. But there's a rule, Zelu umazeo aso elukim. Everything in this world has to be balanced. And every power that could be used for the good has to be equally able to be used for the bad. Because otherwise there's no free choice. So if the Rabban Shem put the power in the world of people being influenced for the good, there has to be the equal power for influence of the bad. But it's part of the nature of a human being, because that's the nature of the world. People should work together. Now, where did the Rambam know this? Rambam makes that statement, Derech Briyoso Shel Adam. And did he know it because he was a physician and he examined people and found out that they... Where was the source, obviously, in the Torah that he found, or in Chazal, that says this? So the Migdal Oz says the source of this Rambam, that people are influenced by their very nature, is a Gemara in Ksubas, which you are familiar with as a song, right? Maybe not as the Gemara. The Gemara says, Ketzad Meraktin Lefnei Hakala, right? Doesn't mean, how do you dance, right? Give you little footsteps like Arthur Murray, you know, what's it called? How do you dance? Rashi says, what do you say in front of the Chosen and Kala to praise the Kala in the Chosen's eyes that makes them both happy? The Chosen is reassured that he got a good catch, and the Kala is happy that her Chosen is happy with him. So that's the way to make the Chosen and Kala happy, praise the Kala in front of the Chosen. So what do you say? So Beis Shammai says, and I'm going to tell you the Gemara, and you'll see that it doesn't seem to have anything to do with this Rambam. And then I'll tell you why, how I think the Migdal Oz learned it. And so the Gemara says, Beis Shammai says, Kala kamo shehi. You say the Kala is as she is. And there are three different interpretations of Beis Shammai that I'm familiar with. The most extreme is that you have to say your mind. If you think the Kala is an ugly witch with no redeeming qualities, right? She has a terrible character and she's ugly as sin, right? And the Chosson says, what do you think about my Kala? You have to say, I think she's an ugly witch who has no character. You don't have to go to the wedding. You can stay by the smorgasbord, right? But if you're asked the question, you must give the truth. That is the most extreme in Beis Shammai. Okay. The second explanation of Beis Shammai, a little bit more moderate, is find something nice about the Kala to say. Right? Even if you think she's an ugly witch with no character, there must be something nice about her. For instance, if the Chosson says, what do you think about my Kala? You say, I think her shoes fit perfectly. Right? So you found something nice about her, right? You didn't say a lie, and you found something nice. The third interpretation of Beis Shammai, explanation of Beis Shammai, is you say those words, Kala kamo shehi. He said, what do you think about my Kala? Oh, the Kala is as she is. You think she's an ugly witch. He hears that she's, you know, charming, and everybody's happy, and you didn't lie. The halacha is not like Beis Shammai, right? The halacha is like Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says, Kala no the chasuda. That's the song, right? The song.
There's a chashash for Beis Shammai, because first he said, yoy, 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 yoy.
See, that's cute. Beis Hillel says, Kala no the chasuda. You always say she's a beautiful and charming Kala. So Beis Shammai says to Beis Hillel, you know, you're the nice guys, you know, you want to be nice. But what if she's not a Kala no the chasuda? And the Torah said, Midvar Sheker Tirchot. You shouldn't lie. And you're lying. How do you allow people to lie? That's Beis Shammai's question to Beis Hillel. On that, Beis Hillel answers and says, with another question. They ask Reish Lakish, what would you do in the following case? Somebody goes to the shuk, and he buys a real lemon, right? Not a lemon, but a real, I'll give you an example. You probably could remember. Years ago, they don't do it anymore, in Geula on Friday, they used to sell these paintings. They all said 100 shekel with a big X and then 50 shekel, giving you the impression that they were originally 100 shekel and they've been reduced to 50 shekel. So all these husbands who were shopping in Geula on Friday, right, thought they were going to bring their wives these sublime pictures that were reduced half price. Now these pictures were so horrible that they were the kind of picture that you would hang it with the picture side towards the wall. But husbands are husbands, you know, and they thought they were exquisite. They brought them home and the wife said, give it back. But they couldn't give it back because these people, as soon as they made a sale, ran to another corner because they knew people were going to come back eventually and you could never return it. So what do you do if somebody buys one of these pictures and he says, what do you think? What are you supposed to tell him? That's the most ridiculous, horrible looking picture I ever saw in my life. He can't return it. There's nothing he can do with it. So be nice and say it looks nice. Right? What are you going to gain by telling him the truth? It's like, say a white lie. It's not going to hurt anybody. Make the guy feel good. What is it going to help to make him feel bad? He bought the thing already. He can't return it. Right? If the guy would have asked you when he's going out, what do you think of the challah? Maybe you could have saved him from this fate worse than death. But Lamaisi's married now. This is wedding night. He's not going to get divorced from her now because you think she's an ugly witch. So why say that? So say, what's it called? Kala Nova Chasuda. What's it going to hurt to say that she's a charming and beautiful Kala? That is...
interesting. The hair my son has. But it's Shammai. Shammai is an appraiser.
Ah.
Hillel is Mahalo.
I hear.
That's the Yikur of her name.
They're saying. So in any case, so then the Gemara ends with the following. Mikan Amru Chachamim, from this that Hillel said, the rabbi said, La'olam teidaito shalomnu revis amri. A person should always be sociable. His mind should be mixed in with other people. Meaning, be sociable. Don't be a party pooper. Don't, you know, what do you have to say something, make somebody feel bad, make them feel good, and for that you're allowed to say a white lie, because it's not going to hurt anything, and you're not going to help anything by saying the truth. That seems to be the Gemara. The obvious, where in the world did the Migdal O see in this Gemara a place where the Rambam had a source that people are influenced by their very nature? It doesn't seem to have anything to do. I think no. He learned that last line of the Gemara the following. The Chorav Beis Hillel didn't answer the question. How can you lie? Not let it lie. So the Gemara says, from here the rabbis learn, La'olam tehei daito shel adam uref. There's not a command. Your mind should always be mixing with other people. It's a statement. From here the rabbi said, La'olam, forever. A person's mind is mixed in with the mind of other people. You are influenced by what other people think. And therefore, that chassan for sure thinks she's a kalanova chasuda. And therefore, it influences you. You may not feel it consciously, but somewhere in your subconscious, you are influenced by what he thinks about that woman. And therefore, in your mind, she's also a Kala Nova Chasuda somewhere. It's not a lie. It's not a lie.
Sure.
And therefore, right, therefore you can say it because otherwise you'd influence him.
Yeah, but it sounds
you right. Say it enough,
right. Right.
Influence.
Right. Both ways, right. Why put a thought into his mind that he's going to now look at his wife and think that she's an ugly witch? And the opposite, because he thinks that influences you. And because it's part of the nature of the human being, it's not a lie anymore. Because it's clearly there somewhere in your psyche. It's got to be there. It's part of the human nature. You're influenced by what he thinks. Even though consciously you think differently, subconsciously there's somewhere it made an impression on you. That's the Rambam. In any case, let's go back to this. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that even though perhaps he would overpower the influence of Yisro, but bringing up children in this environment, he knows he's taking a risk. He's taking a risk. And maybe by the second child already, maybe Yisro will already be on the right path, but by the first child, right, in a few months, who said? And therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu agreed to stay there, he was hoping that he would be able to shield his children from the influence of Yisro. He was hoping that maybe he would get out of there before they would be able to be. But he knew that there's a very strong possibility that my firstborn, at least, will be influenced by Yisro. And still, he agreed to stay there. That means that by agreeing to put yourself in a situation where you know you're taking a gamble, that means that you are willing to take the side of the gamble that you don't want also. So it's as if Moshe Rabbeinu made an oath. He committed himself that his child should go to Avodah Zarah. He was hoping it wouldn't happen, but he knew it was a gamble. And on that side, that's what would be the result, he still agreed to stay there. It's as if that he was. And therefore, we can learn from here that even if you don't become influenced, but you put yourself in a situation where you could become influenced for the negative, then that in itself is something negative. That in itself is something negative. Because you're taking a gamble and you're willing to accept, you're hoping that you'll win the gamble. But you know that if you lose, you're accepting that. When you buy a lottery ticket, you're hoping to win. But you know that if you don't win, you've just lost, you know what, 50 shekel, 60 shekel, whatever you paid for the lottery ticket. So you're willing to lose that 60 shekel. You're hoping you won't. But when you buy that, you're making a statement. I'm hoping I'm going to win, but I've accepted the fact that I could lose too. And I'm willing to lose that 50 shekel. I'm not going to get it back. So that's what it means by Yoel Moshe Lo Sheves Esa Ish. Okay, one more point, and then we'll... The Rav Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you won, right? You were chosen to be the Redeemer of Klal Yisrael, and I'm going to send you and go to Paro, tell him that the Jewish people are supposed to get out of here and take them out of Egypt. What does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Who am I that I should take the Jewish people out of Egypt? And I don't think they're ready to be taken out anyway. So God answers him, tells him, no, what's it called? I'll be with you. And the Jewish people who received the Torah, I'm giving it to my credit. Moshe says, I really don't think I'm the right one. I can't really speak that well. Right? And for 7 days, he argues with God. Okay? And God patiently answers all his things. Until the last day, he says, Shlach Tobia, send somebody else. Send Aaron. I don't want to hurt my older brother's feelings. Right, and till now he was the one who was contacted in Mitzrayim with the Nevuah, and now comes the big job, and he's passed over for his little brother. I think he's going to be insulted and hurt. I don't want to hurt him. Send him. Then God gets angry, right? Gets angry at him, and he loses the kahuna. Now, first of all, how in the world, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu could be very humble, but you don't argue with God. God said, I chose you. Moshe said, I think it's a bad choice. I don't really agree with you. I mean, what kind of ridiculous thing is that? That's not humility. That's chutzpah. Right? The Rav Hashem said, I chose you. Who's Moshe Rabbeinu to argue? And if all the arguments, the Rav Hashem patiently answers him, except the one where he doesn't want to hurt his brother's feelings, that's the one he gets angry at? So, I don't have any proof to what I'm telling you, except a small amount of proof. But I don't think Moshe Rabbeinu argued with the Rabban Hashem. I think you have to learn that parsha completely different. If somebody can find a source for this, I'd be very happy. I'll show you my proof in a second. He right away said, yes, I'm going. No, there's no shaila. What do you mean? God, you know, God just wasn't asking him, do you want to go? He told him, you're going. Finished. I'm going. But just like there's a nasa v'nishma, right? Nasa means I'll do it. But then there's a nishma. I'd like to understand. I'm not making my doing it conditional on my understanding. But once I'm going to do it, I'd like to understand why. Wouldn't it be better to understand what you're doing than not understand it at all? I'm going blindly, but I want to understand now as much as I can. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm going. That's not the question. But let me understand, why me? Why are they ready? It's not that I'm saying no. I'm saying yes. But explain to me why, whatever. And that's 100% okay. Nothing wrong with trying to understand what you're doing as long as you don't make it conditional on your understanding. I have to do what the Rav Hashem wants me to do. But I'd like to understand as much as I can. So you can understand everything about your mission. My proof is the following. If Moshe was trying to get out of it, what were the excuses? Who am I? And they're not ready. Well, that's an excuse to say forget about the whole mission. Okay. Then he said, what's it called? Well, I'm going to come to them. They're going to ask me, what's his name? What am I going to say? God tells him what his name is. Then he says, well, you know, I can't really speak that well, so maybe I shouldn't do it. Now, the Chorah, if he's trying to get out of it, he should have exhausted all of his reasons why he shouldn't go. And after God doesn't accept any of those, then he said, okay, if I'm going already, what's your name? What am I supposed to tell them? But first he asks him, what's your name? Then he's back to, I shouldn't go because I can't speak. But it's according to what I'm saying, that he just wants to understand, then it goes according to the more important things of understanding. First, I don't understand why me, and I understand why they're ready. Once you explain that, okay, I'm going to go to them, right, and they're going to ask, what's your name? What's your name? Now I know that. Now I have another little problem, I can't speak well. Right, that's a minor problem if you're trying to understand the shlichus. But it's a major thing if you want to not say, I shouldn't go. So the order is wrong if he's really trying to get out of it, but the order is right if you learn it my way. So why did God get angry at the end? Because in the end, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't trying to understand why he's going and how he's going, but why not somebody else? That's not your business. Your business is to understand your mission, but not why not somebody else. Let Aaron ask me that question, why not him? Not you. That's not your domain. The Nasa, the Nishma is understand what you're going to do. Don't ask me why somebody else isn't going to do it. That's my business, says the Rebbe Mishloim. For that you have no right to ask. So the only question he had no right to ask was why not Aaron? But the other questions, why me? What am I supposed to do? What? Let me understand my shlichus. 100%, no problem.